can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day.
Good afternoon and welcome to Choices Along the Way. Today's show is going to be all about answers. What we're going to do today is, you're going to find this really interesting. We're going to try to fix all the world's problems in about an hour. Now, we know that sounds impossible, but we're really going to give it a try. But first, let me tell you who Stuart Wilde, Michael Tesarian, and Dr. Bart Ehrman are. For us, they have been an absolute guiding light. Stuart Wilde is considered to be, by many, one of the greatest living metaphysicians in the world today. Many of the most famous New Age, New Thought writers and teachers have privately studied with Stu, or they, like us, have been greatly influenced by his works. Michael Tesarian is a researcher and expert on the occult histories of Ireland and America. Michael's research has been very enlightening in understanding history in general, instead of the party line that has been fed to us for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And Dr. Bart Ehrman is the author of more than 20 books and is currently a professor of religious studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And he is a leading authority on the early church and the life of Jesus. Lynn.
Well, you know, we did not come easily into these books. They literally found us because we were searching for truthful answers. We didn't want the party line any longer, and we weren't satisfied with the party line. So now to read any of these books, it would probably, from our point of view, be totally impossible for any one of you not to resonate with some parts of each one of these works. If the truth is what you're actually searching for, there has, David can verify this, I can only speak for myself, but there has always been an underlying uneasiness within the both of us from early childhood. We never really knew what it was. However, it manifested in not ever being understood by anyone in our life. The people that we loved dearly did not understand where either one of us were coming from.
Absolutely.
And it was no surprise that we kind of gravitated towards each other some 20 years ago, and together we've just continued searching for our answers. When one day David was listening to a radio interview being given by Art Bell and Stuart Wilde, and he only caught the tail end of it, but it was enough for him to go to Stuart's website, and there he found a beginning of an education that would ultimately help us evolve into who we are today. When Stuart wrote about what he coins as fringe dwellers, he based this on his own life experiences. I instantly realized when David was reading me this description how a lot of my clients must feel or how they felt for years when they had a problem and people were always telling them, or doctors or whoever they went to see, that there was nothing wrong. However, when someone finally put a name to whatever they were having, they felt relief because they knew that they weren't crazy. And this is how I was actually feeling when David was reading the definition of a fringe dweller. Now, to quote Mr. Wilde, fringe dwellers are those with a special karma. It's a destiny that they have chosen to descend, to transcend, and those deep inner feelings puts them on the edge of society, kind of looking in like, you know, window shopping all the time, never knowing how to go through that door or even wanting to go through that door to actually get in to the store. David and I aren't hippie revolutionaries, or we're not New Age space cadets, and we just are set apart because we think differently. There's a spiritual energy that calls us to wanting to know the whys of something and looking further than a religious dogma to get that. And we are always questioning and always asking, why this, why that, and we've been doing this since an early age. It doesn't mean that we're special in any way or that we're nuts, although, you know, I'm sure David can speak to that. Many people think we are.
Let's not run that out into the ethers.
We're not traitors. We're not communists. We're not socialists. We're not anarchists. It simply means we just hear a different drum. Being on the fringe can cause a lot of pain for yourself, as you always feel a tad rejected by family, friends, and society. We, as fringe dwellers, we inherently know our authentic self. We don't have to go dig to find out who we are. We've always known who we are. It's just other people have a hard time accepting who we are. Now, for some of people, you might be more comfortable with the name the black sheep of the family. That's the person who just doesn't conform to the rest of the family. Because, you see, when we're born, we are born into a tribe, which is called our family. Usually, the tribal laws are already set into place, and those are political, emotional, financial, social, and so on. We grow up with these sets of laws in place, and sometimes we continue through our whole lives with these laws. And sometimes, possibly one, sometimes two, of the kids go against the tribal laws. Then you start hearing things like, well, you know, she was always different, or he never really, you know, understood or hung with us. And you always kind of grow up thinking that there is something wrong with you. I know I did. I was raised like David was, in a Catholic home. Mine was a very staunch Catholic home. I went to Catholic school. We had the priest over every Sunday for dinner. I cleaned the altar after school. I at one time had visions of becoming a nun, but they quickly, you know, left my head, thank God. But in the Catholic religion, around the age of 7 is the age of reason. They feel that a child of that age knows the difference between right and wrong, and it's at that age you make your first Holy Communion. Now, something always happens in a person's life if they truly are a fringe dweller or a black sheep of the family. Something happens to plug you into that feeling that you just know that your life is going to be completely different than anybody else's around you. And mine happened at the age of 7. When it's time to make the first Holy Communion, you also make your first confession. Now, Sister Augustine, who was my nun, she just very calmly said to me one day, you know, Linda, it's time for you to go in to make your confession. Father is waiting. I kind of stood there. I was fine 1 minute. I got out of the pew. I stood there, and I looked up at the nun, and I said very calmly, you know, sister, if God is everywhere and he knows everything, then I don't have to go in there and tell Father anything. God already knows. Well, I can guarantee you that we had World War III in 1958. Not too many people realized it, but the world changed forever. For me, my parents, the nuns, the priest, everything. And at that moment, I realized my life was never going to be easy. I'm sure David had the same, well, not the same experience, but he knew at some time that this was going to be the same for him.
Yeah, pretty much at the age of 7, about the same time for me. So,
go ahead.
You know, it's okay to disagree with us or really anybody else just because you go to a different, a beat of a different drum. That's perfectly okay. If something doesn't resonate with you at this moment in time, maybe it's not your truth. Maybe next week or next year or however, you know, you're going to know when the time is right, because what we have found since age 7 and since after we, you know, got hooked up and got married and started living our lives together, when the student is ready, the teacher is going to appear. And it's okay to be different. I mean, it's blatantly obvious that the energy out there is shifting and things are changing very, very rapidly. And we're becoming less and less embarrassed, I suppose, is maybe to coin a word, about being a fringe dweller. And, to take us to, we want you to think a little bit outside the box today. And we're going to talk about solving problems. I mean, that's our theme today. It's time for phase two. You know, we're really, really into phase two as far as we're concerned. So I want you to think about, we want you to think about these thoughts that we're going to lay on you today. And when the show is archived, you may want to listen to it again and just see what you think. But we have found that the trick to solving any problem is to first take all the emotion out of it. Emotions are feelings, and what it takes to solve problems is thinking and logic. Thinking is done with your brain, basically a computer that loves to solve problems. The problem that your brain runs into when it's working on a problem is that it can only work with whatever data you've accumulated over your lifetime, plus whatever life experiences it has in its memory. If you have to seek outside help for a problem, or you have to look it up on the internet or read a book about it or ask a friend or a loved one, how do you know if they have a truthful answer for you? In reality, you really don't know. We have been fed lies, half-truths, and deceptive facts for well over 450,000 years. And you always got to remember that just because it's on the internet doesn't make it the truth. Just because another human is promoting themselves as an expert doesn't make it true. Just because you learned it in school, that doesn't make it true. Just because your pastor, or your priest, or your rabbi gives you an answer doesn't make it true. The key to coming up with the right answer for you is in your gut. What does your gut tell you?
Whenever you hear someone talk to you about anything, if it's not your truth, you're not going to resonate with it. You're going to get a funny flip in your stomach. Or if it does resonate, you're sometimes going to get goosebumps. You're going to get that little tingle on the back of your neck. You're just going to become very calm. Your heart is going to be joyful. Then you know that whatever the person is saying to you is your truth. It's connecting with your soul in some way.
Absolutely. And the reason that we're calling the show today Phase 2 is that Linda and I are just plain sick and tired of hearing about how screwed up things are. We don't want to hear or read about any more problems, any more conspiracies, any more plots, any more noise. We are looking for answers, period.
And that's why we went to Michael Tesarian, Dr. Bart Ehrman, Stuart Wild. We have our personal mentors, John Ashbrook, Carol Campbell, who happens to be a Catholic nun. They mentor us all the time. They help us figure out the muck and the mire in the world.
Yep. Over a lifetime, we've put together our own little posse of people that we run things up their flagpole and see what they think. And they never pontificate to us, just like none of the books that any of these authors. They're not pontificating. They're simply presenting some thoughts, words, and deeds for you to think about.
And they must resonate with us because we're through 18 of 20 Stuart Wild's books. We've read most of Michael Tesarian, and we have everything that Dr. Bart Ehrman has written. So I think we're pretty resonant with them. We talked to Carol. In fact, I just talked to her a little while ago, Sister Carol, probably twice a week, and we check in with John at least three or four times a month. So we have a lot of people that we resonate with that keep us on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, moving in a forward direction. And there's, as far as we're concerned, we don't do any right. We don't do any wrong. We do the very best we can every day, and we do everything we can to work in a forward direction. We try to stay out of the past, and we're projecting good stuff into the future. But let's talk a little bit about these problems that that are ailing the world and some logical answers. And meanwhile, you know, it'd be a good idea to hold some good thoughts and say some really good prayers for everybody over in Japan, because there's an absolute tragedy going on there with the earthquakes and the tsunamis and the
nuclear reactors and...
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's a Western nation. It's a very industrialized nation, and those folks are very evolved, and they need a lot of help. There's nothing I can personally do. As a first responder for emergency management type crises like this, I have a pretty good idea of what's going on over there, and I'm glad I'm here and not there, because it's quite a tragedy. But Let's talk about a few problems that maybe we can throw some logical answers at. Let's talk about the financial crisis. Without a doubt, I mean, unless you've been living in a cave someplace, we are in a financial mess. Let's talk about a simple solution that would have us financially stable probably in months, if not weeks. Did you know that there's about $1 trillion traded every day on Wall Street? Yep, $1 trillion with a T, dollars, every day. Did you know that nobody pays any sales tax on these transactions? You know, we pay sales tax on every single solitary thing we have in our lives, probably not the air we breathe, but they'd get that if they could. But let's say, for example, if we were to pass a national law that they would charge, let's say, 0.5% sales tax on all these transactions that the government and the states could use, we would be virtually debt-free as a country in a very short period of time. We could split the money 50-50, half to running the government, and the other half equally divided amongst the states. So we'd be talking about hundreds of millions of dollars being available to get this country back on its feet. Yes, of course, the sales tax laws covering this situation would have to have some caveats, and there'd have to be some limits and some details that are thrown into it, but the traders could write off on their income tax, you know, some of their expenses and stuff, and maybe some of these other rules would have to be changed, but the details would be very easy to think through without a whole lot of emotion.
And therein lies the biggest problem. The world does not support logic. The world supports emotion. We are fed emotion 24/7 through Yahoo, through the news, through the ads, through the media. The media runs this planet. If they can get something on there that's even a half truth and fill us full of fear, then we are being, I mean, if you're being fed emotion 24/7, then logic is being starved. And it's very hard to switch over into the logic. That's why you have to get quiet. That's why you have to get into different books than a romance novel or the People magazine or something that you can get on, you know, over-the-counter shelf.
Yeah. Now, okay, in one very, very bold statement, we have probably settled the financial crisis that we're all going through in this country right now as far as taxes.
Now, does that mean we're going to die now because we settled the financial crisis and they're going to come after us?
Because now, I want to tell you, the healthcare crisis. I mean, this is a really, really easy one. First, there isn't a country in the world that has a national healthcare system that works, period. Canada, Great Britain, Japan, and everybody else that has tried this is going broke trying to maintain it. Once again, just like the financial crisis, we're not addressing the root problem. All we're trying to do is spin the emotional aspects of healthcare. I just don't get it. Doesn't the White House realize that there's a reason why this kind of plan has never been put into play successfully? To put it very simple, it won't work, period. Second, if you want the healthcare crisis to go away, why don't we just force traditional medicine and big pharma to actually cure something? When was the last time you heard of any disease being cured? I guess if you really stretch things out, you could go back to the 50s and talk about polio, but we're talking about 60 years ago. We've got to just face it. This is real simple and easy. Cancer, for example, is a $1 trillion a year business. All we ever hear about is that we're looking for a cure, running for a cure, or some other spin on the fact that no one's actually looking for a cure. There is no way on earth that everybody that's involved in cancer treatment or research is going to put themselves out of business. The same thing holds true for diabetes, heart disease, Lyme disease, common cold, or any other disease you want to talk about. There are millions and millions of people healthcare professionals and researchers and drug company employees that have dedicated their lives to the hunt for a cure. And they earn a good living doing that. There's no way they're going to put themselves out of business and have to find another career path with a cure for any disease, period. It isn't any different than nobody's going to build us a refrigerator that lasts 100 years. Nobody's going to build us a car that gets 150 miles to the gallon. It's not going to happen. They're not going to put themselves out of business. That's human nature. Most diseases are very modern. By that, I mean that cancer was not a really big issue back in the Roman days or the Middle Ages. I've even heard from Dr. Marcola, I believe it was on one of his emails, that cancer is 100% man-made. Over the last 100 years, we've poisoned the environment and loaded ourselves up with all kinds of toxic chemicals that, over time, can overwhelm anybody's immune system, so cancer and other diseases can take hold. Over the last 60 or 70 years, the health establishment has had nothing better to offer in the treatment of cancer other than radiation, chemo, and surgery. We tell our clients to get checkups, and they have all kinds of useless treatments to offer if something is discovered, but they fight tooth and nail to make sure we don't know anything about where cancer or any other disease comes from, and that there are alternative methods in preventing these issues from showing up in the first place. You've got to think it through. It's been a healthcare crisis as long as we've been walking upright. I mean, come on now. This is not rocket science. When was the last time you heard of anything getting cured? All I ever hear about is put on the pink ribbons, let's have another telethon. There are no magic bullets out there, but nobody's fixing anything. All they want is more money.
Lynn? You know, most of you know what I do for a living. And if not, I'm a gravity flow colon therapist, and I have been for almost 25 years. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten calls from people that are actually leaving the hospital after being there most of the night having x-rays and tests that cost thousands of dollars, only to be told, yep, you got gas, yep, you're loaded with stool, period. No resolution, nothing. Most cases, they're not even told anything to do about it. They're just sent home with all this gas and impacted stool, and they're in pain, and they don't know any more what to do than when they first went to the hospital. So why are we constantly intervening instead of preventing? Why is preventing such a far-fetched idea in so many people's minds? You know, here we go. These are the fringe dwellers. They ask these kind of questions. Why would people do this? Why would they not look outside the box and see that there might be an alternative way to take care of this? Not everybody drives a Chevy. Some people like a Ford. So the same thing with healthcare. Just because a person is standing there in a white coat and a stethoscope draped around his neck doesn't mean that he has all the answers. The stuff that we do is over 3,000 years old. The fact that I'm a colon therapist and that used to be in the hospitals back in the 30s and 40s, you know, you had to have a prescription to have one of these. And after a while, huh?
Yeah, I've got a... My line always has been is if I've got a torn aortic valve, I want a thoracic surgeon, the cast and crew of ER and Chicago Hope on a life flight helicopter on their way to help me. Don't call my chiropractor.
Until I get out of the hospital.
Yeah, then when I'm all done and they've got me all put back together again, then I can start blending some of these other modalities into my health. Right, Lynn?
Yes. Let me share a story with you. My son, Jason, was a soccer player, and he was about 8 years old, and he had a very intense game, and he was virtually knocked down very hard. And then the opponent went ahead and further kicked him in the side of the neck. Well, the game was over, and hours later, his father came to pick him up for a visit, and within a half hour, 45 minutes, he was back. His father said there's something wrong with him. He started running a high fever. He was throwing up. And now his father was insisting that we go to the emergency room. So we packed him up, and we went to the emergency room. Well, after we got to the emergency room, all they wanted to do was to give him a spinal tap. I knew his neck was out. I knew he needed to be adjusted, but I couldn't get anybody to listen to me. Here, they wanted to turn my kid over, give him a spinal tap, run him through ungodly tests, and all the while I was giving him, while they were out of the room, homeopathic pills and was bringing his fever down. So I knew he didn't have anything bacterial, he didn't have anything viral, and the reason he was doing what he was doing was that his neck was so jacked out of shape. It took my friend Chris, who husband at the time was my lawyer, for him to draft a letter up, bring it to the hospital, give it to the doctor, for us to be allowed to leave the hospital before I was being threatened with having my child taken away. The nurses came in and called me all kinds of names of how a rotten mother I was, and I mean, it just went on and on and on. So we finally got out of the hospital 5 hours later without a spinal tap, and I called the chiropractor. Yeah, it was 12:30 a.m., and he was a very good friend. I told him what happened. He met us at the office, and virtually he told me, you know, Jay's here, but his neck is in the next state over here. A simple chiropractic adjustment, and 10 minutes later, the kid is in the car, sound asleep, on the way home, was sore the next day, went to school the day after that, and everything was fine. Now, why can't we have a medical doctor that would say to you, listen, this kid was playing soccer, he's probably out of adjustment, why don't you get a chiropractic adjustment? No, they wanted to put all this pain and thousands of dollars into something that didn't need to be. And that's where I started looking completely alternative.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got
thousands of stories like this.
Lots of stories like that.
Most kids are raised medically, as David's kids were raised medically until we got together, and then
stepmom,
they kind of went a little, you know, chiropractic, which most of them stick with the chiropractor even today. My kids were raised chiropractically, not medically. And the rule in my home was, whatever the kids had, if it wasn't improved within 24 hours after an adjustment, they would see a medical doctor. We didn't have to do that. A chiropractic adjustment always worked. So why we can't get all on the same page is completely out of my scope of understanding.
Yeah. So instead of us trying to come up with a new way to pay for everybody's health care plan, would it not be logical to reorganize the way we approach our health? The problem is that the powers to be start spinning all kinds of emotional rhetoric that in the end put us right back where we started, yet one more telethon to collect money for yet more useless research. Lynn and I are both all for research, but as an investment, we're not getting very much for our money, for the money that we're spending. At least on the lottery, you know exactly what the odds are of winning. In research, we're 100% dependent upon humans that are fully ingrained in a system that runs on emotion. As long as you run on pure emotional energy, you're doomed to fail. If you start asking good logical questions and put traditional medicine on the defensive, they're going to eventually run out of lame answers and have to state the truth.
Or they're just going to plain throw you out of the room, which we've been thrown out of the room plenty of times.
the real truth is that nobody's going to put themselves out of business. I don't care what anybody says. They do wonderful things when it comes to surgery. They do wonderful things in sports medicine. They do wonderful things when it comes to trauma.
They are absolutely phenomenal in Operation Smile. If you ever watch that program where they go and operate on children with cleft palates, absolutely astonishing what they can do. But on a daily basis, they are not there to prevent. They're there to intervene. So why not prevent before we need to intervene?
Yeah. Monitor, 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 and more monitoring using billions of dollars worth of high-tech equipment And then all of a sudden you wake up and you find out the doctor's looking in your face and says, oh my goodness, you've got a tumor. Well, the tumor didn't show up yesterday. Nobody wakes up with cancer. Nobody wakes up a diabetic. Nobody wakes up with heart disease. Nobody wakes up with any kind, well, I'd say 80% of all the diseases out there that we spend probably 80% of all of our healthcare money on don't show up overnight. But it's one more example of how the powers to be have spent centuries working on dumbing us down. For thousands of years, we were kept ignorant by not being taught how to read. At the same time, women were kept as second-class citizens. Then, if you were not white and male, you spent your life as a slave in some way or fashion. Whoever was in power has always hidden the truth to protect whatever scam they had going on. If you control the media, I mean, I just saw a couple of examples. I mean, you've seen what's been going on with the reporters for Fox News. I was just reading something on Yahoo this past week about how some of our talk show hosts, some of the more controversial ones, don't actually have real John Q. Public Street people calling in questions. They're actually
Oh, my God,
actors.
They don't? You mean they're not real people?
Nope, they are actors that have been given a script.
And oh, my goodness.
They've signed a confidentiality clause, and all of a sudden, you know, believe me, you got to write this one down. There's three things you cannot hide for very long: the sun, the moon, and the truth.
Because eventually
every day,
the sun is always going to come out, the clouds are always going to part, and you're going to see the moon. And if you haven't noticed in the last couple of years, that truth is waffling to the top, no matter what.
Yeah, the tools that they use are really very simple. All you have to do is play on the emotions. Fear and anger are the sworn enemies of truth. If you keep people afraid and offer them a path out that you've designed, you've got their souls. Real simple. Lynn?
And souls can be bought with a can of pop, a bottle of beer, the latest, greatest iPhone, an iPad,
you
name it. And it seems like, you know, it has been this way for a long time, that we are conditioned to believe through the media that we are exactly what we drive, the house that we live in, the clothes that we have. If we don't have the best phone on the market, then somehow we are less than human. And that has always been a shame. I know I'm sure we all went through that phase. Some of us aren't out of that phase yet, but most of the people that we talk to are. It doesn't matter if you live in a 1,200 square foot home or a 10,000 square foot home. You have as much power as anyone. When you are defined by what you have in material, then you're missing the point of even being here, because you're not developing the soul, which is going to go with you. Your house isn't going with you when you cross over. That car, you ain't driving the car to heaven, trust me. You're not taking those big, beautiful, those clothes with you. So when we concentrate just on the material side of our life and not on the spiritual side, then we're really missing out, because that's the side that will always be with you. The spiritual
side. We spend way, way, way too much time talking about our differences. Well, I'm tall, I'm short, I'm black, I'm white, I'm Hispanic, I'm not. I'm a Catholic, I'm a Baptist, I'm a Jew, I'm this, that, and the other thing. I drive
a
Chevy.
It doesn't matter. It
Who
really
cares?
Does not matter. We all came from the same place, and we're all going to the same place.
Yeah,
and
every one of us has to drink water. Every one of us has to sleep. We all have to eat. We all have to go to the bathroom. And every single solitary one of us is immortal. We are been here forever, and we are going to be here forever. It's the great equalizer. You were all born, and you're all going to die.
Yep.
So what's the point?
And nobody needs to be on a pedestal. You know, Charlie Sheen, oh my God, you know, the man has crossed over in his brain someplace. However, Charlie Sheen takes a crap just like everybody else, believe it or not. The Pope does. The big stars in Hollywood, they don't walk around and everything just kind of like disintegrates and they are, you know, above needing a bathroom. So why are these people always put on a pedestal? Why is it that these people go out and do a job, which is acting, however, they make $20 million for a picture? Why? They're doing their job.
Beyond our wildest imaginations, why, if you think about it, everybody in Hollywood, what they do for a living is make-believe. It's fake. It's written. I'm not saying that a good part that's acted isn't entertaining. There are quite a few shows that we watch. We're watching The Tudors right now, the entire series, and being entertained to no end. But basically, most of what comes out of Hollywood is all imaginary. Yet we're willing to, we have so little self-esteem that we're willing to pay them millions and millions and billions of dollars for what they do for a living, and we give them awards, and we are all impressed by what they wear and what they're drinking and what kind of car they drive and where they go on vacation, what they look like in a bikini. Bottom line,
who cares?
They are no different than you and me. We're all the same. It's frightening. We need
okay,
to talk.
Here are
this
the tools.
So
that...
This is getting me so upset. We need to talk about some tools, Linda.
I know. And, you know, David and I are not together today. David is down at our office, and I'm in at our home because David was doing Snake Saturday with the North Kansas City Police, and which is still going on, which is a big St. Patrick's Day parade that they have in North Kansas City.
27 years we've been doing this festival. Yep, we have
so,
100,000 people in a town of 4,000.
Yeah, and, you know, so these little breaks in between, usually we're just hitting each other going, you know, say something, or, you know, do you have a remark to make, or something, or we can see each other that one of us need to say something or we have something to say, but we don't have that option. So,
there's no cues today, Lynn. No cues.
No cues today. So,
no cues
so what are the tools that we need every day to get above survival?
Yeah,
we
need to enlighten our listeners today.
Well, yes, and we need to accept life as it is. And it sounds simple, but it's hard to do. It was very hard for us. Very hard. So what we're going to talk about isn't like we are just, you know, above everybody else. We're down in the trenches every day just like everyone. And I'm just going to interject this real quick. Whenever I go into the room and my client is there, I always say, "Hi, what's going on? How are you?" And they'll say, "Oh, I'm fine." And they'll always ask me, "How am I doing?" And 99% of the time, I always say, "I'm doing absolutely fantastic." Well, I started to realize, because they started remarking back to me, sometimes I really pissed clients off saying that. And one day a client said to me, "Oh, yeah, your life is just perfect. You know all the answers. You always have a fantastic life." And I just kind of looked at them, and I had to grin, and I thought, "Oh, honey, if you had just gone through what I've gone through this morning, you'd be slitting your wrist instead of standing here asking you, how are you doing today?" So it's all in our perception of our life is in the tubes or it's not. So with that being said, this is a line that Stuart Wilde says in his book, and this is what David and I have adopted for our own life. If it works for you, it's great. It is what it is, and I accept it. So unless you accept yourself as you are right now, there's no way of getting that you're going to be able to move forward, period. Because unless you totally accept yourself, then you're always going to be stuck trying to figure out what's wrong with you, and there's nothing wrong. You can play the denial game all you want, but your life is exactly what it is right now. The car is exactly what it is right now that you drive, the house you live in, the job you have, the person you have a relationship with, the family you come from, where you live, and we can go on and on and on. If you first accept your life as it is, then you can start projecting what you want in the future to be different, if there's something you want different. If you want a different car, if you want a different home, a different job, a different person in that relationship, whatever it is, you can positively project that forward and watch it just roll back into you, no matter what it is.
Yeah, the second step that we have found that we've been working on, because these are all we've been working on it, going to be working on it probably the rest of our lives, is that we all have to stop being a victim. There is not a human being alive today or that's dead or is going to be born that isn't going to have a story, a problem, or some kind of a tragedy in their life. If you're spending all your time burdening all the rest of us with your chronic complaining about how life is mistreating you, then you just need to get past yourself. If you got, you know, what's that, pull up your big girl panties and move
deal
on.
With it.
Deal with it. I know this, I realize, please.
I know we always sound like we're cold and we're insensitive.
This sounds cold, and I don't mean to be insensitive. But unless you start being very, very grateful for what you do have, and we all have something to be grateful for, the universe will simply let you wallow in self-pity for the rest of your life. Now, no matter what goes wrong with anything in my life today, I am not sitting over in Japan scared to death that maybe another earthquake is going to kill me, or a tsunami is going to come and wipe me out, or I'm going to die from radiation poisoning. It can always be worse. I'm not sitting in Libya wondering if a sniper is going to shoot me. I mean, I could do 10 hours of nothing more than gratitude, 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 because there's a lot more going on in this world that is really, really bad that is not happening to me. So the fact that I woke up this morning is a good sign. I can't do nothing about yesterday, and none of us knows if we're going to have it tomorrow. So what we try to do is be very, very grateful for every 24 that the boss says we're going to be down here. Lynn, let's talk about step three.
Step three is just plain get out of the noise. Stop watching the news. People watch the news before they go to bed, and then they come in and go, I can't sleep. Well, do you think you can't sleep?
Yeah,
because
CNN,
you put all that murder and suicide and everything that's going on in the news into your brain. And so when you sleep, it all comes back up to the surface and you're going to replay it all night long. Stop reading the paper and stop, what is that, getting ginned up on talk radio.
Yeah, with President Obama said that great line, the only one I've heard so far, but it was a great one. Stop getting all ginned up on talk radio.
Stop telling the world your every thought, word, and deed on Twitter, Facebook, and all your friends texting. I can't tell you how many clients I have on the table that are constantly texting while we're doing a treatment. They are not present with that treatment at all. They're texting. They're worried about the next call. Oh, my God, I can't miss a call. Everything is non-social. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm just going to text them. I'll put it on their Facebook. You know, the emotion does lose. You lose a lot of emotion when you're reading something on a text or on Facebook, because a lot of times people put something on there, but it's the inflection of your voice can either make it something really good or something really bad. So just get out of the noise. You can't live in your reality if you are constantly filling your mind with what's going on in the world. You can't do anything about what's happening in Japan except to send good, positive, healing, loving thoughts their way. So, you know, being on Facebook 24/7 back and forth about all this, it's just more negative crap that everybody has to deal with. So send out the positive stuff instead of the negative stuff. And,
Let's talk about step number four. This has been a really, really, really big one for us. You got to start developing some discernment. Part of getting out of the noise is in developing a sense of what's important and what is somebody else's crap. Start investing your time and your money and your prayers and your thoughts into positive ventures that are going to help you grow and evolve. Don't invest in other people's problems and adventures.
Because you know what happens? You take on their problems and their adventures, and you get sidetracked.
And this is David and Linda, the Fixers, telling you this. We know
no
all
more.
About
we
this.
Stopped the fixing a few months ago. Well, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And,
now,
you know.
Now, this does not mean that you can't be empathetic. It just means that you don't live your life vicariously through everybody else's. You came into this world by yourself, like I said. You're going to leave by yourself. What happens in the middle is completely up to you. It's your life. Now, Linda and I do not have a problem with karma, as do more people on this planet believe in karma than don't. Now, there are some Christians that are kind of crazy about that kind of stuff, but to the best of my knowledge, and maybe it's in one of Dr. Ehrman's books, karma was a big part of Catholicism and the Christian religion until it got pulled out by some pope or some saint or some scribe decided, well, let's not put that in the Bible anymore because there was a political reason for that. But we do believe in karma. And if you do and you want to keep coming back over and over and over again to learn the same silly lessons one more time, that's completely up to you. We would rather learn the lessons and not have to come back. Now, the second thing, one of the other things about discernment is you've got to learn to ask really good questions. My father, God rest his soul, taught me not to believe anything I heard and only half of what I see. Now, this philosophy has served me pretty well over the years, and I've learned that most of what I've learned in school was a bunch of BS, and only 60 to 80% of what's on the Internet is true. So be very careful what you deem to be the truth. The best rule of thumb is that, like we said before, what does your gut tell you? Not your mind, but your gut. Your gut will seldom tell you any lies, but your mind will play all kinds of tricks on you, just like a computer game will. You've got to learn to be discerning. If you don't know what to do, then don't do anything. I mean, all these little colloquialisms and things out of the past and things that Mark Twain said and all these great people in history, Ben Franklin and all the Dalai Lamas and a lot of the saints and all those people, they are really, really true.
Yes, they are. And like we said, if you don't know what to do, do nothing. The Indian tradition, which I love, is we wait 3 days before we make a decision on anything. We sleep on it for 3 days.
Did you know that the actual route, if you go out and buy a car right now, if I go out and buy a car or buy a house or buy some big capital investment, there's a law, it's a federal law, and I think it's most states too, that you have 3 days to back out of that deal. Did you know that that comes from the Native American philosophy? That's where that law came from, because wait 3 days. Excellent idea, Lynn. Great.
Yes. It came down from my ancestors.
That's right. Well, yes, because Lynn is Cherokee and Blackfoot. At least
yes.
She has that ancestry, but not enough of it to get a card.
Yeah, if they kept better records, I'd be having a casino probably right now. But,
yep.
You know, well, they
all my relatives are from Europe, and we're Cossacks and White Russian and Polish. So we've got Native American and the folks from Poland there.
And the other thing, step five, you got to start spending time in nature. You got to get closer to nature. Nature is right there next to God. My uncle always taught me, if you have a problem, Linda, go plant some flowers. I thought he was nuts when he told me, but when I have a bad problem that I just cannot get the answers to come, I go outside and I start digging. I plant flowers. Sometimes if it's wintertime, I clean. I scrub and clean the house. That's my form of meditation. I kind of zone out, and sometimes the answers come in so fast and furious I can't write it down quickly enough, but I always get my answers. So nature brings you back into your heart center, into your soul, where you hear the voice of God. So take a walk. Don't forget that Mother Nature does not need us. We need her. If we all disappear tomorrow, the earth is still going to keep running. It's still going to be spinning. The sun's going to rise and set, and the seasons are still going to change, whether we are walking this earth or not. So we both believe, David and I, that the earth is a living being, and it's known as Gaia. And an easy way to start developing gratitude is by showing nature, by word and deed, that you have a healthy respect for what she provides for you on a daily basis. Right now, with all the changes, the earth changes going on, we believe that Mother Earth is a little pissed, and she's coming to
cleanse. If this was 2,500 years ago, they'd be tossing virgins into a volcano or off a cliff right now trying to appease the gods.
Yes.
I mean, they may be doing that in Polynesia, for all I know. I mean, someplace out in the Pacific. But believe me, you know, one of the great things, like, was one of the Stewie books, one of the Stuart Wilde books, his comment was he's a big, big promoter of spending time in nature. And I believe he spends time in nature every day. He likes to go for walks and stuff. If you're in trouble and you can't figure something out, go hug a tree. I mean, yeah. Go wrap your arms around a tree, because it's connected to the ground through the roots, which is connected to Gaia through that energy. And then it points to the sky, so it's going right to God. So you've got yourself, I mean, that's your pipeline. That's your iPhone app called a tree that can connect you with nature. Sit down next to the tree with your back against it. And think about what you listen to what it has to say to you. What kind of questions do you have? What does God want you to do? What would be the suggestions, the things that you can think about? Because you've got a free will. And then when you're all done with the tree, what I was taught, when you're spending some time with nature, and you always find the biggest, oldest tree, which is generally the elder, take some coins and bury them underneath the tree as a little thank you. Because money doesn't mean anything to a tree, but it does to us. So what you're telling the tree is that, thank you, we appreciate your help. And again, that goes back to the other step we talked about, gratitude, and then more gratitude. Lynn?
No, keep talking, David.
Okay.
You're doing fine.
Thank you. But we've got to spend more time with nature. And
We want you to think about kids today, they are not out in nature. They're in front of a TV with a video game or an iPad or something, but they're not climbing the trees like we climb. They're not running the fields. They're not doing anything like that. They're not connecting, and if they're not connecting, they're not being grounded. How many times you see kids that are just going crazy? They can't sit still. They can't do this. They've got so much nervous energy that parents don't know what to do with them. Send them outside. Take the iPads away from them. Take their games away from them. Make them go outside.
I realize that. You know, we're an older generation, I suppose, if you think about it. But
we're better. We're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
That's right. We're well-seasoned. And when we were growing up, during the summertime, if we weren't in school, we'd get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we'd hit the ground running at 8 or 9 o'clock after breakfast, and we didn't come home until the streetlights came on.
Yes.
We might come home for lunch or a snack or something like that, or if we needed to go to the bathroom.
But you always went down the street because the lady made better peanut butter and jelly sandwiches down the street.
That's another pondering question. Why did everybody else's mother always make a better peanut butter and jelly sandwich than your own mother? I don't know. Maybe it was because of the fact that we had strawberry jelly in our house, and I don't like strawberries, but my friend Mark Walney's mom used grape. So, and she used crunchy peanut butter instead of smooth. And, these are the questions of life that have eluded us time immemorial. But
if you are a black sheep of your family, these are the questions that you're always going to ask, and you're always going to be searching for answers. You know, Dr. Christiana Northrup is a OBGYN, and she is an absolutely phenomenal medical doctor, and she's got wonderful books. And one of her research was that she took families that had 4 and 5 women in each family, and the mother would get breast cancer, and 3 out of the 4 daughters ended up with breast cancer. One daughter didn't. And this interested them, and they started doing research, and they found that this one daughter either moved away or she was like a black sheep. She just did not believe the tribal law that if mom has breast cancer, chances are you're going to get it. She did not take that into her soul. She did not own that. And that's very important. If you're ever diagnosed with stuff, don't take it in. Don't say, I have. Just say, the doctors say it's this. Once you own something, then your body has to deal with it and it has to do something with it. So don't take ownership of a disease. Take ownership of your power of being able to conquer that disease. Nobody knows how powerful they are because nobody has been allowed to know how powerful each of us are.
One of the reasons why we wanted to share these thoughts with you today was there's the old adage that if you're don't like the way things are, change them. If you've been doing the same silly, crazy, and or stupid stuff over and over and over again, why would you expect different results? Families can be like that. Families can be very, very loving, and I'm not saying I don't love my family because
cruel.
I do. I love my family dearly, but they have their thoughts, words, and deeds, and I have my own. I am an independent thinker. I was created by God as an independent soul, and God is inside of me, so that makes me part of God. And in some circles, you can even say, I am God, just like He is. Because I'm part of Him. I have the same power and the authority that God has herself. So if I want to make changes in my life, I've got to do things differently. Because if something is not working for me, why keep doing the same thing over and over and over again? Why? Because my mom did it? Because my dad did it? Because it's the way we are? Or it's because I'm Catholic? Or because I'm an American? Or because I'm tall? Or because I'm short? Or because I'm skinny or overweight, or because I like to eat corn on the cob? No. Do things, think them through. Take the logic and figure it all out. And Lynn, I'd like you to wrap us up with some really famous words by Stuart Wilde. What did Stewie have to say?
Just before I do that, I want to interject this. With everything that is going on, Japan is just the beginning. We're going to have some major, major earth changes. So if you have any unsettled business that is trivial, I mean, families can be very cruel and families can be very loving, but it's time to settle the stuff. If you can't settle it, then it's time to let it go, bless them, and walk away from them. Because what's happening in the world is much more than a trivial little upset and people not wanting to come out of their comfort zones and deal with those upsets.
Yeah, we're not talking about a thunderstorm here.
Huh?
We're not talking about a thunderstorm.
No, we're not talking about a thunderstorm. We're talking about a complete change in the way we all live on this planet. And like I said, it's been starting for a long time, and Japan is just the true beginning. And if things don't turn around quickly in Japan with the nuclear reactors, it's going to affect all of us on some level. So if you have trivial matters and you think that they're huge, then compare them to what is happening in Japan and settle them. So with that, we want to thank Michael Tesserian, Dr. Bart Ehrman, John Ashbrook, Carol Campbell, all the people that have been very, very influential in our life and helping us along the way. And we want to leave you with the infamous words of Stuart Wilde as he closes a couple of his books. Have a great day and make it easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
God bless.
Thank you for joining
us
today.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.